The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. We got the whole band together again as we head into hour three. Did I step on my lines? Sorry. Are we good? Am I good? Can I talk?
You're great. All You're right. terrific.
All right. Welcome back as we head into hour three. We do so with the whole band. We've got Lewis Holman, who is the managing partner and director at Insight Analytics, LLC.
Always a delight.
Good to see you, sir. And you're looking spiffy with the gin-tied mustache going.
It's fun. It's fun. I've been trying it out.
Yeah, looks good. And, of course, Hugh Holman, former mayor of Tempe. I don't know what more I can say about him, a lawyer about town. A seneschal. A community seneschal. That's what you are.
I'll take that as the highest compliment you can give.
You should. It's the highest order in medieval times.
The castellan of public order.
I'm feeling a little concerned about my wherewithal.
No, don't be. Let me set. You want me to set it up, or you set it up? Either way,
I'll go ahead and set it up now that my mouth is open, and that
you
has
are the
to
seneschal.
Do with I am the seneschal. Has to do with the testimony that occurred yesterday in the Senate before the Senate Intelligence Committee about the threats that the United States is facing around the world, and it's frankly world order is facing around the world. There was nearly, and I'm closer to saying zero, coverage in any serious way about testimony that is shocking and I thought would have been high headlines in our newspapers that say that they're the newspapers of our country, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and others. Even maybe I would have seen it in the Arizona Republic, but no.
And not the Wall Street Journal and not the LA Times.
Exactly.
None of them. It just wasn't there.
It wasn't there. And this is testimony by primarily the director of the FBI, but also the director of the National Intelligence. We had the CIA and others testifying before the Senate about their assessments of the threats that the United States is facing in its current configuration, and how much of that sources from the failure to manage our southern border. The testimony, I thought, was striking. And just one takeout from that is Marco Rubio. Now, you may not like Marco Rubio. I find him to be very smart, very thoughtful, and a serious policymaker. And his testimony was quite focused on trying to suss out, reveal the risks that our own intelligence agencies have discovered and are monitoring and yet are unreported, while we have had for the last 6 or 7 months pitched battles over whether or not the southern border is secure, with an administration insisting first that it is, that there's nothing to look at here, and then when people started looking at it, saying they have it under control, and then blaming, for example, agents at the border for whipping migrants, which, of course, was all false news. And then during the buildup to an effort to create a bill that would have allowed the border to be more secure, claiming victory when the Republicans refused to go forward because the bill included an exemption for 5,000 migrants a day to come across the border illegally without documents. Well, do the math. 365 days times 5,000 per day gets you 1,825,000 people could enter the United States under that exemption in 1 year. When you've got, I think you've done the math, about 12 million currently here.
Depending on whose numbers you like to look at, I've seen estimates ranging from 10.6 million to 16.3 million.
So you'd add another 1.825 million people per year under that exemption.
Of whom we know.
With the president arguing that he doesn't have the authority to secure the border, and yet he took the authority that had been used by the former president and undid it to open the borders. So which is it? But more important then is the source of the insecurity in the United States is the main subject of the testimony I wanted to touch on at the moment in the Senate yesterday. And the question is, why didn't this get picked up anywhere? In fact, the FBI director typically has his opening comments for testimony posted on the FBI website. They then post the news stories associated with his testimony and post the testimony.
Because it's good press for him, usually.
None of it.
None of it. Not there.
None of it is there.
Right.
So here is just an example of Marco Rubio questioning. And watch his approach. This is a very reasonable approach. He's not screaming. He's not yelling. There are not veins popping out of his forehead. He's asking very serious, important questions. For example, Senator Rubio, quote, "Are we seeing crimes from people that entered the country over the last 3 years, some of them with ties to gangs or other criminal organizations?" Unquote. Director Ray, quote, "From the FBI perspective, we are seeing a wide array of very dangerous threats that emanate from the border, and that includes drug trafficking. The FBI alone seized enough fentanyl in the last 2 years to kill 270 million people. That's just on the fentanyl side. An awful lot of the violent crime in the United States is at the hands of gangs who are themselves involved in the distribution of that fentanyl," unquote. He goes on, Senator Rubio goes on and asks, quote, "There's no doubt that people were criminals in that people that were criminals in the country of origin have crossed the border and are now in the United States committing crimes," unquote. Director Ray, quote, "Correct," unquote. And finally, Senator Rubio, quote, "There are smuggling networks all over the world that specialize in moving people from all over the world, including from the Middle East, Central Asia, and so forth. Are we aware that any of these smuggling organizations are run or conducted by people that have ties, for example, to ISIS or other terrorist organizations?" Unquote. Director Ray, quote, "I want to be a little bit careful about how far I go in the open session, but there is a particular network where some of the overseas facilitators of the smuggling network have ISIS ties that we're very concerned about and that we've been spending an enormous amount of effort with our partners to investigate. Exactly what that network is up to is something that, again, is the subject of our current investigation," unquote. Senator Rubio, quote, "There is a network we're concerned about that has facilitators involved in it that have ties to ISIS and other terrorist organizations," unquote. Director Ray, quote, "Correct," unquote. That's damning testimony by the director of the FBI about the kinds of risks that have now are being inserted in the United States in this society because we've failed to secure our southern border. And the political gamesmanship that has been going on with the Democrats in the House and Senate and the president saying that they would have secured the border but for Republicans refusing to include an exemption that would allow 1,825,000 people to cross the border illegally that we'd know of is crazy. That is a defensive mechanism that I think touches on your monologue in the first hour. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't hear it, the monologue is yet again brilliant and understands the psychology of those people who are defensive about their activities and understand that they are deflecting from their own failures. And in this instance, we have testimony about the fact that, as an example, fentanyl has come across the border in massive amounts. Just the part we've interdicted could kill 270 million people. And there are lots of people we don't know about. And when we come back after the break, I'm going to turn it over to Lou to tease out the kinds of things he's been searching and investigating based on the risks that are posed to our country. And now he can tie to the very testimony that was presented before the Senate and not covered by our news agencies at all. Today, the same kinds of testimony is taking place in the House, and there is some pickup of that activity. We've seen it on Fox, at least. We're waiting to see if it's covered more fully. But what you've got is incredible testimony that demonstrates we are not a serious country when we do not have our press corps picking it up as crucially important to the success or failure of this country.
To remind, these are hearings titled on the Worldwide Threat Assessment. These are threat assessments from the world to the United States of America that no member of the press picked up yesterday. We saw maybe an online thing at Yahoo News. Tell me if this is small or not. I like to focus a little bit on language. So about 3 years before he wrote 1984, George Orwell wrote an essay on politics in the English language where he said the abuse of language is designed to make lies sound good and murder sound respectable. I just want to ask you guys a question about rhetoric, and you tell me if I'm off base. Joe Biden corrected and retracted his calling the alleged killer of Lake and Riley illegal to undocumented. He said, I should have used the word undocumented. We use the word here undocumented from time to time. We knew he was here illegally. I don't think we knew he was undocumented. A lot of these people are actually documented. When we call them undocumented, we're talking about a very specific thing, but they have documents.
And in fact, that is one of the gravest concerns the FBI director is raising, is that they're using documents that cannot be verified.
Right.
So we actually are presented with documents at the border. Somebody's released into the country when we actually have no real idea who that person is.
Yeah. Can Without we just say one more word about that on the other side? All right.
Please
Hugh and Lewis Hallman will be right back with me. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show, brought to you in part by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals. It's just fascinating about the use of the language in all of this, because I do think it corrupts our actions. And I was saying in George Orwell's essay on politics in the English language, he's talking about the abuse of the English language to make the indefensible defensible, in part. And this weird fascination, this weird obsession to use the phrase undocumented as a term of art, as a euphemism for what we used to call and what Title VIII still calls an illegal alien, and then Joe Biden retracting his statement about Lake and Riley's alleged murderer being illegal to undocumented. It's just not true in most cases. We certainly don't know. A lot of these people have documents. I've been to the border many times. They aren't undocumented. They just don't have the document that Title VIII requires.
That is, they don't have the legal right to enter the country.
That's exactly right.
Yes, and so without the legal right to enter the country, they are now presenting documents to agents at the border, documents that say they are person X with no way to verify whether they're person X or person Y. And it was not that long ago, 20 years or so ago, that we had folks who blew up two towers in New York City, and folks who blew up part of the Pentagon, and folks who, but for people on an aircraft, would have crashed that aircraft into the White House. What the FBI director's testimony yesterday tells you is we now have ISIS cells in this country operating, and that those people came to this country through the southern border, that they have pieced that pathway together, and that we continue to leave that border open to our great peril. But I want to move to Lewis in terms of talking about the unseriousness of this in contrast to, say, how we handled COVID. And Lewis did some real good thinking about, some very smart thinking about, the fentanyl crisis we're facing now in our country, and contrasting that with how seriously we took COVID.
Can I make one more special plea on this point before I turn it over to Lewis? Thank you for your patience, Lewis. Rubio got to this a little bit with Ray in the questioning yesterday. Rubio said, is there now a black market emerging to sell fake Social Security cards, fake green cards? Have you seen reporting on that? Ray, quote, on the dark net, there is a significant marketplace for different kinds of stolen identities. Rubio, what about the street? Ray, I think so. They are documented.
Yes, and my point earlier in the last segment about the fact that he is now admitted in the House side in his testimony that some of the gravest concerns we have are that those documents being used at the border to get entry, illegal entry that it is, without the proper documents and the correct legal permissions, they're entering the country without the proper documents, but they have documents that cause an agent to release them into the country in their own recognizance. Imagine a courtroom operating in which somebody shows up and says that they are Mr. X and had nothing to do with the murder of someone, and here's my paperwork, without anybody checking it out to determine whether that testimony is true. We don't release people on their own recognizance for much lesser crimes in this country than the kinds of things that are now happening as a result of people crossing the border without proper documentation. But back to Lou, I'd like him to contrast this idea of, here we have a focus on fentanyl and an open border allowing that crisis to be exacerbated, and then contrast that with, as an example, how seriously we took COVID. Lou?
So I want to set the table here with what was really covered in this hearing. And there were largely, I think, four real key areas of focus for the senators and the various representatives of the intelligence agencies. And they were principally competition from near-peer adversaries. That would be the Russias and the Chinas of the world, and to a lesser extent, the Irans and the North Koreas. We have issues at the southern border, such as fentanyl and the health and security impacts of that. We have the human movements across the border. That would be the third issue. And then the various counterintelligence issues that fall from that, such as, again, the issue of ISIS or other terrorist cells, or those connected to the acquisition of military intelligence or the sale of intellectual property to the Chinese, that type of thing. And then the final one would be non-state forces and transnational issues such as terrorism, climate change, what have you. There were two things really that I felt should have joined those list of topics at the table, one of which was mentioned only in passing, and that would be space warfare and space defenses, the weaponization of space, because it strikes me that in a near-peer adversary environment, in a potential conflict with Russia or China, that is the first day top-tier priority is space assets, and the handling of that stage of a conflict will then set the territory for the entire rest of it going forwards. The other one that was missed that I would have liked to have seen, particularly given our digging into it on this show here, is the moving away in recent decades from the U.S.'s two ocean policy and issues of readiness amongst our conventional forces to then deal with those near peers. Those were not really talked about very much. And I felt that certainly a discussion of the national security environment was incomplete without bringing those issues more into the fore. But we wanted to talk about fentanyl and COVID in our seriousness, so I apologize for the delay there.
No,
now,
it's fine.
If we look at the fentanyl issue itself, the most recent data that we have from 2022 suggests that approximately 70,000 people died in 2022. And preliminary data seems to suggest it's about 80, 85,000 in 2023. The number is increasing significantly. Compare this to the entire total from 2020 of COVID deaths.
Now, to today.
The CDC claims that number is about 1.12 million Americans that have died from or with COVID, meaning that either they died directly from it or COVID was found in their systems at time of death. We can get into those perhaps at another date.
But we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. 1.
Right. 1.2 million. Now, the average age of someone who died from COVID is about 75 years old. Now, the average U.S. life expectancy currently is 78 years old. That means that every COVID death actuarially costs the U.S. citizens, in some ghoulish calculation, about 3 years of life, typically. A fentanyl overdose happens at a median age of 45 years. A fentanyl overdose therefore costs the American people actuarially 33 years of life, 11 times more than a COVID death. And so it is very interesting to me that if you simply look at the deaths from 2023 to 80,000 or so and do the math on that at 33 years per death, you come out at a figure of about 2.75 million years of American life gone from fentanyl.
COVID, in one year,
just 2023. In contrast, COVID cumulatively at 1.12 million people would have taken away just about 3.3 million years in total. So the death toll from fentanyl just in 2023 was nearly as bad as the cumulative death toll of all of COVID. And I will note that for COVID, we spent as much money dealing with that problem as we did the entirety of our defense expenditures for World War II adjusted for inflation. We are not treating these things equally or with the seriousness that they deserve.
Let me hang another lamp on that, another lantern on that when we come back. Lewis Hallman, well done. Hugh Hallman and Lewis Hallman are my guests. Lewis Hallman of Insight Analytics, Hugh Hallman of Everywhere Else. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, coming to you from the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group 960 Patriot Broadcast Studios. Lewis Hallman and Hugh Hallman are my guests. Lewis, you were doing a great breakdown of the way we treated COVID and yet the way we are ignoring the crisis of fentanyl, particularly as it's coming through our border. Let me hang another lamp on statistics here for people to get their sense of it. Remember, as you so well put it, what we did for COVID, it changed the country. churches, synagogues closed, after-school programs closed, schools closed.
We were prepared to suspend civil liberties unilaterally.
All of it. Businesses shut down. We shut down everything. And as you said, the average age of a COVID death was usually somewhere in the neighborhood about 75.
Yes, we know that young people died too, but the statistically, the way to do the math is the average age was 75. That includes everybody in the average and the number of lives lost.
My point was that 1,700 people under the age of 17 throughout the entire 3 years of COVID died from or with COVID. 1,700 over 3 years under the age of 17. We are losing three times that amount every year in that age group to fentanyl.
Correct.
That's how unserious we are.
Exactly. Thank you for clarifying that. The essence of what we are enraged by and we're so angry about during the entire COVID lockdown is as we were looking at the data and saying, here's what the reality is. We had people in charge who absolutely had the data. You had people at the federal level who were collecting the data and knew full well what that data was showing. You had school districts who knew what the data was with respect to the risks to children and the risks that children otherwise face in our society from sexual abuse and other kinds of abuse in their households, from all the other challenges, suicidal ideation, alcohol and drug abuse, all of those kinds of things. We have not even touched on those elements. And at 1,700 youth under the age 17 and under dying from COVID, and now just compare the results of suicidal ideation and the results of that, alcohol and drug abuse, sexual abuse, and all the other kinds of things that befell our youth, we have to ask again, what were we doing? And those who now say, gee, we didn't know, are lying to you.
We knew.
Because they were the very same people who had the data. They made those decisions and did it anyway.
Lewis.
You were making the point, Lou.
Well, so I wonder, you know, how it comes to this. How is it we live in a world where we are inundated by people with college degrees? The amount of intellectual cultivation and production is so unbelievably high. You know, if I think 40 to 60, so nearly half of all people, I think, attend college at this point, or just slightly over half. And yet somehow it feels like we are living in an ever more complex society that is breaking down at the edges. And I think there are really three phenomena that explain part of why it seems that it's so hard to get good governance and good decision making out of these large judge bureaucracies, and why it seems that we're always dealing with these kinds of problems. And the three phenomena are the principal agent problem, the Peter principle, and negative selection bias. Now, the principal agent problem is a concept in game theory where if you are directing your own resources on behalf of yourself, you do it very efficiently. If you're directing someone else's resources on your behalf, like someone gives you money to renovate your house, you'll be pretty efficient with it, but maybe not as efficient as if you were spending your own money. But finally, if you are spending someone else's money on somebody else, that is the least efficient way because you have the least skin in the game and are least incentivized to make sure that the dollars get spent well. So that's part of our issue, is that we have a lot of people, the very nature of an elected government, of a representative democracy, runs in the face of that principal agent problem, which is one of the reasons we should be very careful about constraining the government. The next is the Peter principle.
We should be careful to constrain the government.
Thank you. The next item is the Peter principle. This is the notion that one is always promoted to the level of where one is slightly incompetent, right? Because if you're good at your job, you get promoted. And so you keep getting promoted until eventually you stop being sufficiently good at your job to get promoted, meaning you are slightly incompetent. And so people tend to rest in large organizations where they are just sort of just out of their depth. And so this can explain partially the hypocrisy, the arrogance, and sort of the unskilled nature of government. And then the final one is this negative selection bias. And this is the notion that if one is in a position of authority, the chief threat to one's authority are one's subordinates, particularly ones that are more capable than oneself. And so the incentive then, particularly if one is in a bureaucratic job, is to make sure that all of one's subordinates are as untalented and as selected for loyalty as humanly possible. And in doing so, you can see how all of these massive incentives, no one needs to be in a cabal, no one needs to be a secret agent, but just out of the dint of the corruption of human nature and our own laziness, we get horrible, horrible outcomes.
Let me pick up on
that. That is government.
Yeah. We saw some of this in other testimony I was highlighting last week. In fact, we're seeing increasing amounts of it. Lewis Hallman and Hugh Hallman, and I will be right back. Late in the evening, Paul Simon, welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Hugh Hallman is showing off his dancing shoes here. Lewis Hallman is grounded in his chair. We're grateful for both of you doing playing your parts. Lewis, you had a tripartite analysis of why we're where we're at. Try this on for size as a good description of where we're at. From Leo Strauss in 1955, we are in a position of beings who are sane and sober when engaged in trivial business and who gamble like madmen when confronted with serious issues.
Well, I would add to that as well the notion that when the founders were writing, we had already coined the phrase that a lie can get all halfway around the world before the truth can get its boots on.
Right.
And that was in an era of age of sail ships.
Right.
Now I would posit that a lie can get all the way of around the world, get married, raise a family, have grandchildren, and bring those grandchildren back before the truth can get its boots on.
I like it. I like it. Go ahead. Run us those three.
So the three forces, the three sort of game theoretic selection pressures that are on all of us are the principal agent problem, the Peter principle, or being promoted to the level of one's own competence, and negative selection bias, wherein one cannot tolerate subordinates more competent than oneself. And it is through these pressures of leadership and stewardship and dealing with taxing other people so that one can distribute those tax dollars to other people's benefits that we see the slow, grinding, inefficient behemoth known as government really take shape, all without an Illuminati or a conspiracy in sight. You know, there's also sort of the notion that one should never explain to malice what could be explained by incompetence. And I think that there is a lot of truth in that.
Then when you do add incentives to move large piles of money from one pocket to another, like occurred during COVID, recall that our rush to address COVID was based on the notion that money would be taken from the general population, those who make it, and given to those who were in greatest difficulty, like Boeing. The LA Lakers, like other large corporations. Boeing is my favorite example.
Or the consulting companies of various congresspeople's spouses.
Yes.
And all of that was done when we started pulling back the curtain and looking at where money was being spent. As I recall, the number was about 12 to 18% of the money that was supposed to go to the average person who was locked in, couldn't do their job, lost their paychecks, et cetera. That's what we actually got, was 12 to 18% of the money. And the rest of it was sloshing around into all kinds of government agencies and private companies, to the point that just a few months ago, the state used some additional COVID money to address things in the state that folks decided they wanted to do. Why on earth did the federal government not pull back in all the unspent COVID money that absolutely needed to be spent immediately to save us all? So we've got spending going on now in the last year and a half by every level of government, city, county, state, and federal level, of money that was set aside as COVID money to help us through the pandemic, that's being spent on all kinds of lovely, shiny objects that people want because it advances their interests. You don't have to have the cabal. You don't have to have terrible conspiracies to understand that on top of the three concepts that Lewis expressed, you then have incentives that cause people to do bad things that benefit themselves and their friends. And that as long as it's a big enough group of people doing it, we're not going to complain about it too much. How many COVID misexpenditures? We're now talking about, the last time we discussed this on the show, something in excess of $300 million.
Billion.
Thank you for that correction. $300 billion out of
the six. So not a dollar from every man, woman, and child. That'd be $1,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States.
Yeah. $300 billion out of the $6 trillion. That was just complete waste and theft. When do you get $300 billion in free theft? I didn't realize that that's how our government systems operated. In the same question that Republicans asked, Do you get 5,000 people crossing the border without documentation illegally every day as a free pass? What?
The other notion is that just looking at that number, $300 billion, you know, in what is basically a single year of appropriations,
right,
to be squandered and stolen, that is over that's like a percent and a half of the entire country's GDP. Every ball bearing, every grain of corn, every bolt that was ratcheted, every bed that was turned over, every dog that was walked, 1.5% of all of that labor, effort, activity, 1% and a half of everything that you did between fiscal years 2020 and 2022 was plundered.
That's more than your sales tax for your food when you go to the grocery store in any city in Maricopa County.
Right.
I don't know to stay on this part of the important conversation or to go back to the eight other important parts of it.
Back from the threat analysis.
This is one of the best hours. You've laid out so much for us to get angry about when we're already coming in a little bit hot. But Lewis, one other thing I wanted to say about you had categories of concern. You
sure.
had about four or five categories of concern related to national security. There's one I want to put in a word for, which may not have national security implications generally, though maybe in some specifics, and that's crime. Crime generally. A lot of people on the other side of this issue like to talk about certain statistics with regard to illegal aliens and their rates of committing crimes versus American citizens.
Very few of those people are statisticians.
Well, let me just illustrate it this way. There's a lot of ways to illustrate this problem. Arizona Department of Corrections every month puts out a really handy guide called Corrections at a Glance, Who's Incarcerated in Arizona?
Sure.
And they change every month and they give you the index crimes. Just so you get a sense, they break it down too by citizen and illegal alien. There are 341 incarcerated illegal aliens in Arizona for murder. 341 for murder. Sex offenses, 339. Childhood offenses against children, 880. The idea that this is not impacting our crime statistics and the crime we all live with is false. I just needed to put that out there as well. It's not just national security. It's the kind of stuff we all have to worry about every single day.
Absolutely. And you know, when it comes to thinking about, you know, what are the threats to the American way of life and ultimately, you know, what are the greatest threats to American national security, we've said on this show and many prescient authors have noted, Lincoln most, I think, that we will be undone only by our own efforts, that the greatest threat to American democracy is Americans. And so how we organize and structure our civil society is, I think, directly related to the question of how willing we are to send this all up in smoke. Because what we see is we're living in an era of a bunch of angry, bitter people who are starting to lose sight of what is the experiment for? What are we all doing here? And unless I think we are able to provide a cogent, clear answer to that question, that we are continually gambling with the civil society that then all of us rely upon.
Maybe we should close on that point in the next segment, if you guys don't mind. Child molestation, illegal aliens, just in Arizona, 260. 260. Be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Thank you, Hugh Hallman, our seneschal. Thank you, Lewis Hallman, for whom I am proud to be your amanuensis. Thank you for the discussion this hour. I'll let you guys wrap it up anyway, but I think you put your finger on an important point about this driving directly into the issue of what it means to be in America, what it means to be an American that takes America seriously. And it does seem to me that there is a very large part of this population, some elected, some supporting those elected, some non-elected, who don't think any of it matters, which is why we see the chaos that we see.
So I love that notion. And I think that in some great sense, we have totally lost the plot in our contemporary society on the notion of being inclusive, and that in order to get sanity and sense-making back into politics and policy, we should actually start being exclusionary. We should be discriminatory in some key ways. And what I mean by that is that we should have firm boundaries and borders over what it means to be an American. So much of this is tied up in the conversation about illegal immigration and what the hard demarcation is around that. And until we as a polity are able to come together and think of ourselves conclusively as a people with specific boundaries and definition and acknowledge the fact that a culture and a society is engineered specifically to have benefits for those that it is for, then not for everyone in the world, until we can do that, we're losing a lot of ground. The final thing here on that point that they talked about in the threat assessment scenario was the renewal of Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And in that act, that basically grants our intelligence forces the ability to survey non-citizens abroad. And what's fascinating about this is that that is directly contravening what are the constitutional rights of American citizens, right? We need courts and warrants in order to be wiretapped and have our communication surveyed. But this enables us to bend those rules for non-citizen entities. So clearly, Congress and in the intelligence community and our defense community are able and willing to recognize a distinction between U.S. citizens and non-citizens when it comes to constitutional rights and privacy and civil liberties. And so then, why are we unable and unwilling to do so on the issue of federal entitlements? And if we close that single loophole, we are then able to shut down the incentives that run this entire thing. And through that, we can then come together, redefine what Americanism is, and set ourselves up for success in the 21st century.
In short, you've called upon us to understand what discrimination means. To discriminate between good things and bad things does not mean behaving badly. And our codes already understand the difference between good and bad things. We need to apply that in a discerning way, in a discriminating way, to regain the ground on which this society is based. If we do not do that, we are sure to lose it.
Well done, Lewis and Hugh. Thank you very much. Folks, thanks for spending some time with us. On behalf of the crew, I am Seth Leibson. God bless you all. And until tomorrow,
class dismissed.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.